Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Well, I think officers, and I'm sure you've met a lot of them, right? They will give everything, including their life, for the job, but they won't do anything for themselves. You know, so what we're also trying to preach is this, you know, idea to, you know, keep after, you know, your own interests, you know, be sure to take care of yourself, both mentally and physically. And then also from a leadership position, you know, protect your interests, you know, because again, as you've seen, I'm sure in your career, these agencies sometimes don't take care of their members, quite frankly. The state or the cities will discard a lot of these cops and they're suffering for the rest of their lives and they've kind of used them in essence. So we're really trying to empower our officers to take back their power and to understand what it is that they're sacrificing for the job.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the next episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. You guys see me smiling and laughing here already. This guy that we've got today is one of the funniest people I think I've ever met in my life. And if you listen to the Patreon channel, you heard me talk about bringing a lawyer on here. And you know my feelings about lawyers. You know, somebody famous said the first thing we do is kill all the lawyers, right? But this one's a little different. This guy has become a good friend of mine. This is somebody that I would trust to represent me in any court in the world. He's got kind of a sense of humor and he's a little bashful. So we're going to try and see if we can pull him out of his shell today to talk a little bit, but it's my true honor to welcome Earl Dove to Game of Crimes. Earl, thank you so much for coming on the show, brother.
Hey, thank you for having me, Steve. We've been talking about this for years. It's an honor to be on the podcast.
Well, I hope you feel like that when we're finished, brother.
I will see. I'm optimistic.
Some people I have to pay to get them to come back, but,
I'm expecting a check, by the way. That's in the mail, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's going to be double what I paid you last year.
My billables are getting kind of high these days.
Yeah. I understand. You attorneys. I mean, that's that. You know what? That's it right there. Earl here has been an attorney now for, is it 21 years, 22 years?
Yeah, going on 22 years at this point.
I mean, how do you keep your hair, man? And it's dark still.
I know. Trust me. If you see it in the daylight, there's a ton of gray in this. I'm using all the lighting tricks I can here. Trust me.
Yeah. Well, at least you got hair, right?
So. Yeah. No. I'm banking on that. That's the half Mexican genetics here.
Gotcha. So, well, I hit Earl up just like I do every guest. I wait till the last minute and I tell him about our small town police blotter. Send him out a story. That way, it's like at that. If you get it to him at that last minute, it's harder for him to say no. Earl didn't hesitate. He was more than happy to talk about some of the funny and goofy criminals we have in our society. And just so you know, Earl's located out in Southern California, so he's going to have a story from California. But as we do every week, we give you a disclaimer. This is a show about crime. We talk about bad people. We talk about bad people doing bad things to good people. Now, we take our interviews and our stories here on the podcast very serious, but we never want to miss that opportunity to have a good chuckle at the expense of one of these dumbasses that's out there.
Absolutely.
All right, brother, I'm going to turn it over to you, Earl. Tell us about the man in California.
Well, the one you sent me, I printed up. I've got it here on my legal pad and a story of one of California's finest. This one involves a U.S. postal clerk, which did a phenomenal thing. Basically, it's a 3-year spree of stealing credit cards, debit cards, from the mail, using these credit cards to purchase trips, luxury goods, etc. The name, which shall be protected, is Marianne McDammit, 31 years old. Cop to conspiracy to commit bank fraud, a felony in connection with the sprawling scheme that included the stolen cards and selling to other accomplices nicknames like Ghana and One Punch and Half Squat. I think the nicknames got me on this one. Now, McDammit was earning about $56,000 a year working for the post office in Torrance. Of course, this would happen in L.A., not a San Diego type event. The vacations included trips to Aruba, Tulum, Puerto Rico, Hawaii, Cabo, and the brands, the items, the clothing, phenomenal. We got Hermes, we got Rick Owens, we have Dior, Louis Vuitton, very, very cultured, very nice brands, fantastic taste. Anyway, ultimately more than 100 cards were stolen. When they raided her house, there was literally more credit cards than there were bottles of baby oil at P. Diddy's house.
Oh, no, many. Now you're talking.
There were that many cards. So ultimately they recovered it. They realized that people on the route had started to complain. You know, there were over 100 customers on her route. Gives a whole new definition to going postal. And ultimately she was charged. And now the conspiracy charge carries a maximum of 30 years from what I understand.
You know what? And her last name,
MacDammit. Now, did you make that up?
No, I took it right off of the internet.
I thought that was some kind of West Virginia slang, some alias that you were using. I didn't realize that was a real name.
Well, we might incorporate that now. And see, if it had come from West Virginia, it would have been accompanied with banjo music. You know,
now, very valid point. But I mean, I've been to West Virginia, and MacDammit, something that I've actually heard somebody say in context I won't explain right now.
That sounds like it could be self-incriminating.
Yeah, no, it's wild. I mean, this is typical. It's amazing to get mail carriers to do their job efficiently, more or less efficiently, and do a second job on the side. It's very ambitious. I respect it.
Let me tell you what, brother, around here in Orlando, I've had some tough times with the Postal Service. It's amazing what it's amazing the attitude they take to you or with you once you have an issue. Javier shipped me a box of hardback copies of our books. Actually sent me five. Four arrived. The mail lady delivered them. I caught her in her truck. I said, hey, there's a fifth one. She's like, oh yeah, I got your box here. She hands me this empty box that's ripped all to shit. And I'm like, well, where's the books? I don't know. All we have to do is deliver the box. I said, well, could you report it damaged? Said, oh yeah, let me take a picture. She's talking to her mom on the phone while she's doing all this. So I go to the postmaster, take the box in, and I say, hey, I got a problem here. The contents of my box are missing. She's like, well, did they deliver the box to you? And I said, yeah, how do you think I got it? She said, well, that's all we have to do is deliver the box. I mean, do you think that's the important part of this? Not the contents, but the box.
Well, yeah, you should have checked your wallet. She probably got one or two of your credit cards.
Oh, well, and then called herself MacDammit.
Absolutely. What do you got on the Florida side? This is always a battle between California and Florida as to who's got the craziest people.
It is.
What's your story?
This is kind of heartbreaking because it involves one of my favorite restaurants. It's called Chuck E. Cheese. You guys have Chuck E. Cheese out in California?
We do. I'm not allowed there because of, you know, my probation, but it's okay. Oh,
DMI. DMI.
Just joking. No probation, I assure you.
Let's call Mr. Ferrone, have a discussion here.
Yeah, exactly.
So we got a man wearing a full Chuck E. Cheese costume. He was led out of a Florida restaurant in handcuffs by police who arrested him on felony charges. And this is according to the court records. As several children looked on, Jermel Jones, 41 years old, dressed up like Chuck E. Cheese, was collared by cops inside a Tallahassee eatery where a kid reportedly could be a kid. Before the restaurant worker was stuffed into the squad car, police removed his furry oversized mouse head. As detailed in a probable cause statement, a woman told police that her child support Visa debit card had recently been stolen by a Chuck E. Cheese employee who had used the card for purchases at smoke shops, Circle K, grocery stores, and Whataburger. I mean, at least he's got good taste in burgers, right?
Well, In-N-Out, just saying. For the record, In-N-Out is a superior burger.
Better than Jack in the Box?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then some.
So Michelle Allen, she's the complainant in this. She said she regularly visits Chuck E. Cheese. And the last time she was there, she had her card in her possession. That was at her child's June 28th birthday party. In a bit of amateur sleuthing now, here you go. Allen went to one of the businesses where the card had been fraudulently used. It was used. There you go.
Gotcha. Oh, I could pick that up.
she asked the people there, hey, can I look at your store surveillance cameras? And they said, sure. Upon viewing the security footage from Don's Grocery and Meats, Allen told cops she immediately recognized the suspect as an employee at Chuck E. Cheese. Cops went to the restaurant, asked for the worker if Jones, who they identified as the suspect, was the one in the mouse suit. They confirmed he was. Jones allegedly struggled with officers. Of course, you know, you want to take something bad and make it even worse before he finally was handcuffed. Now, Jones denied swiping the victim's Visa. He said that he'd found someone's credit card at work. If he had found that credit card at work, he would have turned it into Chuck E. Cheese and not kept it.
I believe him.
Oh, yeah. However, there's always a however or a but, right? A frisk of Jones turned up a Visa card with Allen's name. That's a little incriminating. And a receipt for a purchase made with the stolen plastic. Jones was booked to county jail on multiple felony card theft and fraud counts. He was subsequently released on bond from the Lee County lockup. He has previously been convicted of theft, cocaine possession, resisting, trespassing, and smoking weed. Shame on him.
I'm sure it's just a coincidence.
How did that get my pocket? It's not mine.
I see no problem with this. I'm sure any half-decent criminal defense attorney can pull something out of that.
So if you were representing that case, what would you use to – I think you'd probably go straight to plea bargain, right?
I would not represent him in that case. I'd be representing the officer that arrested him. That's where I go with it. I'm going for the good side. I don't play games. I would never represent the criminal elements. Too much stress. I like the set of facts better on the officer side.
And that's exactly why you're on the show, Earl. hey, thank you for playing along. I know it's a little bit silly, but.
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. I will say my criminal had much better taste than yours. You're talking about, you know, Whataburger and weed shops and whatnot. Mine is Dior and Louis Vuitton. So. California wins again.
Oh, jeez. Well, okay. I'm going to let it go at that.
We won't touch that one for now.
Just for our listeners also, you're probably wondering how a guy from the East Coast meets this guy on the West Coast. Well, you've heard me talk a lot about the Southern California Gang Conference out in San Diego every year. You can see I've got one of their shirts on again. They started sending me shirts with my name engraved on this side. So when I'm out wandering the neighborhood, get lost, people can say, oh, that's Murph. Send you back. Oh, he lives over here. But that's where I met Earl. He has supported the conference, what, for 15 years, I believe you said?
Yeah, I've been involved with it since, I would say 2012, 2013. It's been quite a while. It was kind of a gradual introduction, but I loved what the guys were doing. You know, they're really elevating the COP convention idea. And obviously, you've been a part of it for a number of years, but it's absolutely phenomenal. Adrozo, Sosa, Santi, the whole crew, just a phenomenal group to work with. And I'll hope to continue to work with them for quite a few more years.
Oh, I love those guys. In fact, Mel called me late last night. I owe him a phone call.
I try to keep in touch as much as possible. I don't see how they pull it off. It's a ton of logistics and pressure and arranging speakers. And, you know, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. And you can always tell when things aren't going quite right because you'll see Mel.
He's on the
edge of that cliff.
Yeah, I got to say, I remember the first time I met you at the gang conference. It was bizarre because we were talking before I knew who you were. The thing that struck me immediately was when I watched the show about, you know, Narcos, whatever, the accent took me. I thought you were some guy from like Miami, and the voice in the show is very, you know, like Sam Elliott or something. Yeah, and then I met you. I'm like, wait, this is Murphy?
Well, the actor Boyd Holbrook is actually from Eastern Kentucky. So that's why our accents are fairly similar.
Yeah. Here's a question. So he's from Prestonsburg, Kentucky. You're from Princeton, West Virginia, I believe, basically in the same region of the country. Mm-hmm. I figured they would emphasize the accent a little more in the show, you know, because you have a great accent. I think it would have been amazing to have that, you know, really brought out a little bit more even.
Well, you know, when the book came out, they said, well, we want to do the audio version. Said, you want me and Javier to read it? Like, not no, but hell no.
You're telling me they denied you doing your own voiceover for your own book?
Well, they were paying for the speakers, so we didn't really care. They brought in professional voiceover artists, and we got to select them. They gave us three each. The one that does Javier's part, he has the Hispanic accent a little bit. And the guy that did me, the reason I picked him is I've heard him on a lot of audiobooks. You know, before we could afford to fly everywhere, we had to drive and we'd always get audiobooks in the car. And I've heard this guy multiple times and he never flubs it. He's got the right tone of voice. Love the guy. He did a great job.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to say from the gang conference feedback every year, you are consistently voted the sexiest voice at the gang conference. So don't sell yourself short.
Listen, you know, when you lie, your nose grows, right? You're on camera.
Oh, forgot about that. I thought this was a Zoom phone call.
So if you would, Earl, tell us, where are you from originally, where you grew up, you know, your family dynamics, what mom and dad do? Do you have brothers and sisters? What you did in school, sports, anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm from the Imperial Valley, California, El Centro to be exact. It's right on the Mexican border, basically. So very desert border town, a little more like Arizona than California, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I basically am the typical product. You know, it's a very law enforcement, agricultural heavy town, basically. So my mom was actually a nurse at one of the prisons, Calipatria State Prison. And my dad did construction. I have one sibling. I have a brother who is currently a cowboy for a living. And I have a sister, wow, stay-at-home mother. So it's a fairly typical Imperial Valley story, I would suppose.
That's cool. Your brother's is a real cowboy, huh?
Yeah, he got we went very different directions. My friend Hannah always says, you know, we're basically like the same guy in two different genres. He's basically me as a cowboy, and I'm the city version. So he has a ranch. He's got like a slaughterhouse on his property. He's, you know, raising cattle, doing the whole thing. And you have me in the middle of downtown San Diego.
Yeah. You know what, as appealing as it sounds to be a cowboy, I'll take downtown San Diego.
Oh, absolutely. It's hard work. I got nothing but respect for anybody that can do that. I mean, I know how hard he works, and I would never claim to be a cowboy just because I know what that actually involves. And it's brutal for anyone that's done it or lived the ranch life.
You know, El Centro, that's kind of a tough place, man. That's I went there with DEA one time. I'd been promoted up to an SES and went down there for a tour of the Southwest border. We ended up in El Centro and they took me to the checkpoint there they're pointing things out to me because people were coming right up to the gate or right up to the bars there to listen to our conversation. And the border patrol boss there, he said, "You know what that guy's doing, don't you?" And I said, "No." And he said, "He speaks English. He came over to listen to our conversation." You know, me being the humble person I am, I said, "Is that right? Are you a smart ass? You're up here listening to our conversation in perfect English." "Yeah, gringo. What you going to do about it?" "Nothing I can do about it."
Yeah, no, the Imperial Valley is crazy. I mean, great place to grow up. It's, you know, it's a kind of a small town vibe and whatnot. But you're correct. It's right in between San Diego and essentially Arizona along the Mexican border. So as you can imagine, a lot of, you know, drug trafficking and things like that come through that area. In fact, in the third season of Narcos about Kiki Camarena, mm-hmm, he's famously associated with the Imperial Valley. He was a police officer, I believe, in Calexico and spent a lot of time in the Valley.
Yeah, he was. I remember the guys down there, they said, "Hey, boss, tonight we're going to, you know, I'm staying in whatever hotel we're staying in." He said, "We're going to take you to the best restaurant in El Centro, Applebee's."
And when I was a kid, there wasn't even an Applebee's there. So it was even smaller. But the Mexican food is phenomenal out there. Yeah. Next level Mexican food, I will say that.
Who wants to go to Applebee's when you're on the Mexican border? I mean, you want good Mexican food, right?
I agree. I think the people out there get tired of it. I think, you know, it's one of those things where there's so much of it. People make it at home. And when they go out, they want the opposite, which is, you know, when I go back there, it's all about the Mexican food, though.
Oh, yeah. I understand that completely. Did went through school, did you play any sports?
Oh, hell no. I mean, despite my overly masculine appearance, I was not much of an athlete. If I'm being honest, I was more of like an artsy kid. You know, that kind of stuff. So I was more ASB and student body and that kind of stuff. I didn't get into any sports, really. More of a skateboard kid. I was on that edge. A contrarian, which is absolutely necessary for being a good attorney. So definitely on that side of the coin.
I understand that completely. And you said you went to San Diego State. You graduated there in 99.
Yeah, I mean, like most kids in the Imperial Valley, you know, San Diego is an hour and a half away, and it is, you know, I mean, as you know, San Diego is beautiful. So, of course, first chance I got, came up to San Diego, went to college here. The goal was really to become a college professor. I always thought that would be interesting, you know, just be this, you wear tweed jackets, grow a mustache, you know, do the whole thing. As I got further through college, I realized, well, you know, I'm kind of young, and some friends of mine were taking the LSATs, and I said, you know, I'll give it a shot. So I kind of fell into it in between college and law school. I took a full year off to basically travel around the country, you know, and I lived in Nashville, bartended, and had this, you know, great American adventure, you know, right at the turn of the century, oddly enough, 1999 to 2000. Then I came back to San Diego, went to law school, and that kind of sent me on the path that I'm on now, I suppose.
When you were in Nashville, you know where Murfreesboro is?
Oh, yeah.
That's where I grew up there until we moved to West Virginia when I was going into high school.
Oh, really? Murfreesboro. That's where MTSU is.
Yeah. When we lived there, it was MTSC.
Oh, nice.
That's how long ago it was.
Yeah. No, I love Nashville. That's actually, I go back about once a year to this day. I love that city. I love the music scene. I'm a big country music guy. So
yeah,
any chance I get, I'm out there.
Yeah. You know, as a young kid, I hated country music because that's, you know, you're right there in you're below Nashville. But that's you know, I like two kinds of music now, country and Western.
Oh, yeah. No, I love it. Ever since I was a kid, I was a huge country music fan. Well, I went through my heavy metal phase as a very young child, but eventually blossomed into the country music thing.
Yeah. How did you pick law school if you thought you were going to be a college professor?
Well, the logic at the time was this. I mean, you could go and get a master's, let's say, or a PhD in something academic. My thought was, why not do something a little more pragmatic? You know, law school seemed to be a nice mid-ground where you could learn an actual skill. I figured no matter what you do in life, it's good to have some legal knowledge. You get a Juris Doctorate. And eventually, if you wanted to teach law, you could do that. Or you could teach, you know, one of the social sciences, perhaps. I didn't really have a solid plan. I just kind of went in with that attitude. And eventually, you know, doing some, you know, mock trial stuff and just, you know, being experienced to different types of law, decided, yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Nice. At that time, what field within the lawyer realm did you anticipate going into? Corporate law, litigator?
You know, it's a really crazy story. I mean, I got to be honest, when you come out of law school, contrary to popular opinion, most people don't know what they're trying to get into. You have an idea. People will say, well, I want to do entertainment law or I want to do this. But the reality is you need to get some legal experience, right? So most people are kind of floundering, looking for jobs. I was no exception. I came out of law school. I was living on the beach. I was living the life. And I was like, okay, now I got to make some money, get a job. I didn't necessarily think I would stay practicing law, so I wasn't really committed to an area. And just by complete serendipity, I sort of met the Ferone brothers. That's a whole nother story. I can get into that later. But I meet them. I end up interviewing with them. They had just started this law firm, you know, in 2002, I believe. And, you know, I came out in 2003, 2004. And we just kind of hit it off. You know, and the crazy story is that, you know, and this is kind of a classic story. So I'm driving to the interview to meet up with this law firm. I'd been interviewing with firms around San Diego and LA. They were in Westlake at the time. I go up there, you know, on the way to the interview, I called my mom and I was just talking to her. She's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to this interview. She's like, what's the name of the law firm? Where are you at? And I said, oh, I'm in Westlake Village. And she said, oh, that's where my lawyer's at. And it kind of, I was like, I've never heard of anybody from Westlake. I go, what's the law firm? She told me. And of course it was Ferone and Ferone.
Really?
Yeah. So I had no clue going into the interview. So now I'm sitting there kind of laughing. I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. I have gold for the interview. So I walk in and it's, you know, it's the guys, it was John and Paul. And at the time, their original partner, Stuart, I kind of walk into the room. They're doing the typical interview questions. And then they asked me this question, which I thought was brilliant. They go, what do you know about law enforcement, specifically the Department of Corrections? And I go, I don't know a whole lot about it, but I do know that you're representing my mom and she wants to know the status on the case. And they were just dumbfounded, right? So they all sit back, they start scrambling on the computer, they're laughing, they can't believe it. The odds of this are unbelievable. And I had no idea, absolutely no idea. So we just kind of, you know, hit it off and clicked. And that's why I've been with the firm so long. I've been with them for, you know, 22 years, kind of built the firm from the original, you know, four attorneys to, I mean, I think we're almost to 20 at this point. So it's been a great path over the last 22 years.
Yeah. And I believe you're a partner now, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We have a great partnership right now, just kind of expanding. We started really with workers' comp and labor negotiations, internal affairs, LDF work. And we've kind of expanded the firm over the years. We sort of, you know, my position is that we're kind of a one-stop shop for law enforcement. Anything you can get involved in as an officer, you know, we have somebody to assist you, you know, which is great. So we have guys that are handling the IAs or the internal affairs. We have, you know, labor negotiations. We have workers' comp. We have personal injury, you know, all of the things that can affect an officer, basically.
Plus, you guys, it's not just law enforcement. You guys do pretty much first responders. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's public safety in general. So police, fire, corrections, any public safety, quite frankly.
And, you know, I mean, we'd all like to pick on the attorneys.
Yeah.
But I'm just proud to know you and call you friend because of what you and your firm represent. You know, there's, and I've got, you know, friends I grew up with, and my best friend from high school is now a district court judge in West Virginia and used to be a member of the state legislature. And I have the utmost respect for him because I saw how he grew up and worked his butt off to get to where he is now. He's actually a little bit bored as a judge. He had to give up everything because of potential conflict of interest. So everything he'd like to do, he doesn't do anymore. But
oh, yeah. I don't think I could ever do the judge thing, but no, I appreciate the compliment. You know, it's no, it's great. I mean, I think it's given me a perspective on public safety in general that I don't think most people have.
Right.
You know, and it's interesting to see it from our angle because, you know, it's not a political issue. It's not, you know, sort of this you know, whether you love or hate them kind of issue. This is just basically humanity. You know, it is a person struggling with an issue, threatening their livelihood, threatening their safety, their health, you know, so it's been great over the years to really get that perspective. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for anybody. And that's why, you know, I've participated in the gang conference all these years is to sort of foster that community. Cause I think that there needs to be greater connectivity between the public safety community. You know, as you've seen at the conference, I mean, there's corrections there, there's, you know, police, there's sheriff, there's FBI, DEA, a little bit of everything.
A few bad guys. Former bad guys, I guess we should say.
Well, yeah. I mean, those are just for entertainment, though.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. One of the things that they ask Earl to do is they have a ton of door prizes, I guess you call them, or raffles. And so they'll ask Earl to stand up, and he's got a shtick that you just you come out of their tears running down your cheeks from laughing so much. It's hilarious. Nobody is safe. Everybody will be picked on.
Oh yeah, no. It's over the years. I've gotten up there. They've let me get the mic, which is always dangerous. I assume anybody hands me a microphone, it's time for a roast. And so, you know, I'm handing out prizes and awards, but at the same time, I'm trying to see if I can tag a couple of people like Mel or Santi or one of the guys from the conference. You're next. Next year we'll be. I have a couple of good ones for you next year.
Oh, good. Oh boy, I just can't wait. I'm gonna have to think of. I'll have to get some shots in at you before you get a shot at me, maybe. I don't know. We'll figure this out.
You got to get up prettier in the morning, son.
I know it, man. You're talented, I have to say. Now, you guys have offices throughout California, too. It's not just in San Diego.
Yeah, we basically are Southern California. So we have San Diego, Brea, Orange County, L.A. And, of course, we do a lot of work in the Central Valley and now in Oakland and in the Bay Area. So, you know, we're really trying to expand the reach and, you know, serve some of these smaller towns, obviously, that don't have the legal resources that some of the larger cities do, you know, which I think is one of the purposes as our firm is to bring legal services to all officers throughout California, not just the major cities.
Did you ever dream, like when you're going through law school, you know, you don't know what your specialty is going to be yet. Did you ever dream that you would be out there representing our heroes?
No, never. It was, like I said, I can't, I'm not that, I wasn't that clear in the vision at the time. It sort of fell into place perfectly. I mean, the fact that, you know, my mom was essentially a nurse at the prison working with public safety. She was an officer, by the way. Back then they were called MTAs and they carried a weapon and a medical bag. So, you know, she was a formidable person. And, you know, so it kind of came full circle. Today, you know, I'm working with a lot of the same officers that are retiring now that actually worked with my mother back then. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's great to help a lot of the people from the Imperial Valley who are officers, sheriffs, you know, Department of Corrections, fire. So it's been kind of a full circle experience. You know, I kind of went into law school to sort of get out of the Imperial Valley and expand my horizons. Fast forward, now I'm able to kind of give back a little bit by representing a lot of the people that I grew up with, quite frankly, you know.
Nice. I just very honorable. You know, I'm fangirling on here just a little bit over you because I so much appreciate what it is you do, what you represent. You know, we know if you've been on the job any time at all, you've run into one of those sleazebag attorneys, defense attorneys out there that's just looking to, they're not concerned with the facts or the truth. They're just trying to make law enforcement look like the bad guy.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate that. Thank you. And again, they haven't made a movie about me yet. So, you know, I'm not on your level yet.
I'll talk to Netflix, see what they say.
Yeah, see if you can get me a deal. Well, I got a script. I got a script behind me here.
There you go. Now, when I was doing some reading up on you, and I couldn't find a whole lot about you, to be quite honest with you, online.
Yes.
That's a good thing, huh?
Yeah, no, trust me. I wipe the internet daily, just making sure that none of that stuff's up there. So I'm curious to see what you came up with.
you're on a offenders list that has to register if that. No, I'm just kidding.
That's why I'm not allowed to Chuck E. Cheese to this day.
I will go say that. No, but what I did see is that you guys are now providing training to public safety in the realm of leadership.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. So from your point of view as an attorney, what is it that you're trying to get across? Why should first responders listen to you to come in and talk about leadership?
Well, you know, I think there's two big reasons. One is, and if you've been involved in any public safety organization, particularly a union like we have in California, you know, there is a lack of leadership skills. You know, you sort of go from being an officer to trying to look out for the interests of fellow officers. So our first objective really is to provide training insight to the leaders so that they're better able to serve their members. You know, and every department needs a couple leaders, you know, and I think by the time the case gets to us, if you have well-trained leadership, the case has been set up correctly. You know, not too many mistakes have been made at that point. So the biggest objective really is just to educate the membership, you know, make sure they're aware of their rights, make sure they know the different avenues to seek benefits if something happens, you know, and I have found over the years, there are just a lot of officers that just are completely unaware of their eligibility for certain programs, for certain treatment. So yeah, the leadership is a huge component. You know, we do a lot of training with individual departments, individual union leaders, statewide California Department of Corrections. So we're really trying to empower the officers to become their own advocates, you know, so that by the time it comes to us, you know, we're able to assist, but they also understand why and how to get to us.
You know, and I could see that as a burgeoning, exploding business when it comes to first responders, and especially in law enforcement, because you know as many cops as I do, just about, and every cop that you talk to, when you ask them why did you get into law enforcement, it's because they wanted to help somebody. I haven't met a cop yet that said I became a cop because I want to kill people.
Right. Absolutely.
And I can see where, I mean, especially when I was a young officer, that was because I was a uniform for 6 years, railroad cop 6 years, and DEA 26 years. As a uniform officer, you just want to go out there and kick butt and take names. And when people need help, you want to go help them and you want to stop bullying. And that's your focus. It's not about, well, is this going to get me in trouble? Do I need to know about that? Oh, if I'm going to get in trouble, I'll just call an attorney.
Well, I think officers, and I'm sure you've met a lot of them, right? They will give everything, including their life, for the job, but they won't do anything for themselves, you know? And so what we're also trying to preach is this, you know, idea to, you know, keep after, you know, your own interests, you know, be sure to take care of yourself, both mentally and physically. And then also from a leadership position, you know, protect your interests, you know, because again, as you've seen, I'm sure in your career, these agencies sometimes don't take care of their members, quite frankly. The state or the cities will discard a lot of these cops, you know, and they're suffering for the rest of their lives and they've kind of used them in essence. So we're really, you know, trying to empower our officers to take back their power, you know, and to understand what it is that they're sacrificing for the job.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You and I have a mutual friend, Jamie McBride with LAPD. Yeah. Jamie was just on the show here 2 weeks ago, and it's a catch-up interview from being out in San Diego this past year at the conference. You know the stories as well as I do.
Wow.
And he's a union man now. You know, he represents the police union as a police officer. That's his full-time job. But when he tells stories on here, so I had him on for a regular interview and then the catch-up interview, and he talks about how when the higher-ups, the executive staff of the Los Angeles Police Department, including those in IA, Internal Affairs, who are police officers themselves, rather than ever giving the police officer the benefit of the doubt, the first thing they – it's like the first thing they go for is convict, convict, convict. He's wrong. He's wrong. The cop's wrong.
Absolutely.
Which requires folks like you to do what you do.
Yeah, I think the problem over time has been is that, you know, a lot of times the officers are assuming they're going to be taken care of if something goes south. And exactly to your point, a lot of times something happens and there's no support. In fact, they're trying to kind of throw you under the bus or not thoroughly protect you. So that's kind of where we step in. But it's also where I want the union leadership to step in as well and be cognizant of that and educate their members. You know, make sure they understand that, hey, you will have to defend yourself, sometimes even against your own department. You know, anybody who's been involved in an internal affairs investigation has certainly experienced this firsthand, you know. So that's really what I try to do is to, you know, bring awareness. And again, a lot of these cities and counties, they will absolutely take care of their officers. But, you know, there's also the underbelly of that, which is a lot of times they simply don't. You know, they come after you. They're accusatory. They're trying to move you out of the department for whatever reason.
Yeah, they are. You know, and especially the IA guys and girls.
Yeah.
You know, when I say guys, it's all inclusive here. You would think that they would remember their time on the street if they ever really investigated any crimes or if they really patrolled. You know, maybe they were, I don't know, I hate to call them kiss butts, but, you know.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I mean, as you know, there's a lot of power hungry people out there, you know, officers or not. I think when you get a taste of that power, it does something. You know, in my experience, I've seen a lot of people who I was surprised sort of became that way. You know, they sort of joined admin and then really weren't supportive of the officers anymore, instead of advocating for the officers that you were just working alongside. You know, so that's another thing too. I really try to bring sort of a holistic approach. Look at where you came from. Look at where you are. Look at the circumstances that are affecting both parties, right? Admin has certain concerns. The officers have certain concerns. Let's look at all of that as a whole and then try to make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah. So in your experience as an attorney, and I told you I was going to ask you about a couple of different variations of what you do, but it just hit me. What's the funniest case that you've ever had to
Oh my God. I won't give you a category of cases. And this is my biggest piece of advice to anybody in the public safety community. Be careful what you post on Instagram or TikTok. I mean, we have had a lot of problems in recent years, all because of ridiculous things that were posted on social media. Yeah. And I'll let you use your imagination on what we've seen. But I will say that every story that we sit about and laugh at is just shocked that somebody would post this. I mean, you're an officer, you're a public servant, and you know, people aren't aware that what they post on their Instagram page instantly becomes fodder for the community. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm not sure if I can point to a specific one, but I mean, the social media thing has to be the biggest game changer in public safety because of the attention it brings and the lack of awareness that people have about what they're posting.
Well, and not only that, but so our two daughters, you know, our oldest daughter has her master's in HR. So she's always looking for a little bit better job. She's, you know, trying to move up the ladder. And when she was younger, and this, I guess most people do this, they were posting things about voicing their opinions, which you know, were caused a lot of consternation amongst certain groups. And then when people fire back at them, they get ticked off and they fire back, and it just, you know, becomes a little pissing match there.
Absolutely.
Well, these employers, the first thing they do is go check your social media accounts to see what is it you're involved with. You know, and you tell these people, don't put it in writing. Don't ever put it in writing. But they just can't seem to help themselves.
Well, I mean, especially in the public safety community, because there's already, you know, a lot of polarizing opinions about public safety, right? So you start with that. You don't want to feed the demon, if you will, and post stuff that's going to feed into to whatever narrative somebody's trying to spin against you. But, right. You know, I always say to the younger officers, especially, because there's definitely this division within departments. You have kind of the old school guys that were not raised on social media, and you have these newer guys that are in their 20s, let's say, and they know nothing else but living this way, right? And there's a lot of misunderstanding between the two. So the number of internal affairs investigations or just interesting situations that pop up because of that are you know, never ending at this point.
Yeah. I like the Mike Tyson saying, it's amazing how brave people will be on social media when they haven't had the opportunity to be punched in the mouth.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's absolutely true. There's no accountability. That's absolutely right. That's why I say too, you can say anything you want online. You can fight and defend it. Nobody would ever say that to your face, you know, and that's kind of the problem. People get a little too comfortable behind the keyboard, you know, that's going to create issue always.
Yeah. And it's not just my daughters that do that. It's everybody. I'm guilty of it at times. I know. Oh. I get a lot of positive social media responses. I get a few negative ones, but the negative ones are really, really ugly.
Oh, like, I can imagine. Yeah, no, it's all of our public safety members. I mean, they're especially in the last, you know, 5-6 years. I mean, there's been a sharp increase in sort of just public criticism and you know, sort of the viciousness in which everyone's approaching each other. It's brutal. Yeah.
But it's, I'll read it. I know you're not supposed to read it. I can't help myself. But, and if it's about me, I'm okay with it. I can, you know, I can laugh it off and just think, what an idiot wrote, you know, some moron wrote this.
Right.
But when they insult somebody that I know is a hero on this show, that I had on the show, who, and I'm specifically thinking of a veteran who was shot multiple times in Iran. I'll just say Ken Krause. I mean, the man's a legend.
Absolutely.
He's fighting off innumerable odds to the point where they ran out of hundreds and hundreds of rounds of ammo and had to surrender themselves to the, you know, the Fedayeen or the jackasses over there. And he was taken to Evin prison, the one that the Israelis just blew the front door off of a couple of months ago, and was tortured there for about 6 or 7 days. Only by the grace of God did he survive and get out of that place. Came back, you know, finished his time in the Marine Corps, became a police officer. One of the Atlanta, Georgia suburbs. Now he's retired, has written an unbelievable book. His life is just unbelievable. I mean, he's a true hero through and through. And for somebody to make a comment about him, I just couldn't help myself.
No. I can only imagine. It's hard not to engage sometimes, you know, but, you know, I just feel like, I mean, the level of ignorance that people are commenting from sometimes, it's not even worth engaging. I mean, if they knew even a quarter of that story, they would never say those things, you know, and that's true with most. I mean, there's been cases that I've been involved with, and I hear the public discourse about that case, and nobody even knows what they're talking about in terms of the facts of it. You know, there's almost like a talking point that's been put out there, and it's perpetuated through social media, but there's no research. Nobody has read the reports. Nobody even reads the information that's available online necessarily. It's just headlines, argument, that's it. You know, there's no analysis, no critical thinking. You know, that's one of the biggest problems we have in representing public safety is that, you know, sometimes the public perception can get ahead of you, you know, whether it's false or not is irrelevant. You know, there's sort of a narrative that evolves.
Oh, yeah. It's, oh, he's going to kill me because I just forgot his name. John Mattingly, who was involved in the Breonna Taylor. You met him out the
Yeah, Louisville PD. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and you look, you go back and do the research on that, and he's told you what happened. If you do the research, if you've ever been involved in a search warrant, especially involving potential violence, you know how iffy the whole thing is. You know, there's always the opportunity for a gun battle. In this case, and John will be the first to tell you, Breonna Taylor did not have to die that night. She's dead because of the mistake of her boyfriend.
But right.
He turns around and lies, and that happens. But what really ticks me off about that whole thing is how many, what I call pretty people, the movie stars and the sports stars and the politicians, including our former vice president, coming out and openly saying the police were wrong, they should go to prison, when they don't know the facts.
Right. And I think one of the biggest problems today really is, I mean, even taking a step back from that, is the larger issue of the way that things spend out of control on social media from the start. You know, and I think, you know, there's so many examples of this with my cases and through the gang conference. I've heard Mattingly's story. I've heard a number of other stories too, where there's a lot of stuff that I heard where I was shocked that that was the case. And there were, you know, body cam footage, for example. In a lot of the cases we deal with our internal affairs division, you know, I say most people have never seen the body cam footage. They've never been involved in an OIS, and your time to make a decision is just seconds. I mean, you know that from being down in Columbia and just to work with the FBI, it's not like you can just press pause, evaluate everything that's happening and make a decision. This is something where you open a door, click, you make a decision.
Right.
You know, and it's, again, I just wish the community at large would have deeper discussions about some of these issues, because I think they're bigger problems than we give it credit for. I think people tend to focus on a talking point and just kind of march forward with that. And I think it's something where we need to start reading a little bit more than just the headline, you know? Right.
Yeah. And just for our listeners, an OIS, that's an officer involved shooting. For Earl, I work for DEA, not the FBI.
Oh, I always say that. I always interchange those. I'm sorry.
Oh, and there was another point I was going to make on that, because I love that conversation, the way it's going. Yeah, of course, you know, the old man thing kicks in, and I start thinking about something else.
Now, yeah, one of the things I wanted to bring up too is the mental health aspect, you know, yes, with public safety. You know, the gang conference has been kind of a nice platform for that. I really want to focus on that moving forward in the gang conference, and a lot of the speakers, and you've seen a lot of the speakers really do delve into that, you know, the impact that it had emotionally on you. You know, one of the examples that was beautiful was Martinez from STPD. If you remember that presentation,
absolutely.
You know, he'd been involved in a number of OISs and traumatic incidents in his first couple of years of being an officer. And he really focused on the emotional weight of what that did. You know, I think that's something that's overlooked, not only by the law enforcement community themselves, but the public, you know, and it's important to explore that. You know, I really liked, anytime I get a chance to speak with an officer, I always ask a lot of questions about that aspect, because I want to kill the taboo around it, first of all, but also make that part of the normal dialogue among the public safety community.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike was, he was a former guest on here, and his story was so impactful and powerful and emotional that I ended up doing 2 weeks in a row with him.
Oh, so, he's a great speaker.
He was. And that's November 2023. And he was so transparent about everything. I mean, he talks about, you know, the alcoholism, about snapping at his family, almost losing his entire family to divorce.
Right.
I give all credit to the good man upstairs for bringing things like that back together. I think it's nothing short of a miracle.
Oh, especially with Martinez. I mean, that guy is, you know, literally dodged bullets. But I love the fact that he doesn't dwell too much on the drama of the action, if you will. He really gets into the weeds of, you know, the emotional toll that it took on him and his family. And, you know, I think that's something that needs to be spoken about more openly, you know, so that there's no shame around it. You know, issues of therapy or receiving mental health treatment should be commonplace, you know, especially when you're involved in such a high stress environment. But again, that's my own soapbox.
No, you're dead on. And that's something that, especially in law enforcement, has been lacking for years. You know, we get a lot of lip service about it, but when it comes down to, you know, what are we going to do to help our people? Well, you know, go find yourself a counselor and, you know, let us know how it goes. That's not the way it's supposed to be. You're out there risking your lives, for, you know, your life for people every freaking day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know, and some of the people we bring on here are the things that they've been involved with, the shootings and the car chases and the robberies and I mean, all the evil that you see out there. And, you know, you've met some of these guys just like I have. They're studs. I mean, they're big muscle men. They're not afraid of anything. But then something will happen in their career And I'm thinking specifically of one officer. I won't mention his name. He's a former guest on here who went to a car wreck and saw a car had come through and a child had darted out in front of the car. And the car hit it and the child passed away on the street. The police officer gets there and there's a man knelt down over the child, just sobbing, just so emotional. And he thought, well, that must be the child's father. That was the guy driving the car because it was an accident, straight out accident. The kid ran out in front of him. There wasn't anything he could do about it.
Right.
And of all these shootings and murders and heinous activities that this police officer had been involved with, that's what put him over the edge to where he considered eating his own gun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're seeing a huge spike in, you know, suicides, quite frankly, among public safety in recent years. It's really spiked quite a bit. And you're absolutely correct. And if you think about that incident, that might be one of a dozen things that happens that year or that month in some department. So, you know, again, to your point, it's kind of the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know, there's right. years and years of stress and hypervigilance, all these issues deteriorating your mental health. And then finally, there's something that happens that is too close to home or, you know, too real. And it just sends people over the edge. And I've seen some of the most, you know, stable and just physically, mentally strong people just, you know, be reduced to nothing, you know, yep. And it doesn't take much, you know, when you're dealing with this on a daily basis. So, you know, anytime I'm talking to anybody about representing officers, I always talk about that, you know, because I think it's important for people to put themselves in their shoes and say, okay, what if you had to put on a gun and a vest and get out in the field every day? You know, what if you're undercover, you know, with the threat of death hanging over your head every day? What that does to you mentally is something that you can't understand. I mean, I certainly could not understand that, you know, in a real way. I see it, you know, through my cases, but I've never been in that scenario, you know, and I can only imagine what that would do, you know, especially over the course of, say, 10, 20 years.
Yeah, I truly believe that the good Lord gives all of us gifts. And I think when it comes to law enforcement, you have to have that special mindset, for lack of a better word, to be able to see things like that on a daily basis, whether it's a shooting or a car wreck or child molestation, whatever it might be, to continue to live. Firemen, I mean, the things that they see, I couldn't do what a fireman does. Why the heck would I want to go in a burning building? You know, say, why would I want to, you know, why would I want to go to a bank robbery where they're shooting people? So,
yeah, I'm glad you brought up the firemen. Cause I say these fire departments, I mean, the things that they're seeing, because they're doing a lot of medical calls, aside from just responding to fires, I think people see, you know, the television coverage and you see a bunch of officers putting out, or not officers, but firefighters putting out a blaze or a house fire, but they're not showing you the fact that they went in and, you know, there's several dead bodies and they're dragging the bodies out and they're performing CPR, you know, on drug overdoses on a daily basis. I mean, there's a lot of gritty brutality that goes into firefighting that has nothing to do with the firefighting, right? And so that's another thing too. I mean, I don't think the general public sees that side of it.
Yeah, it's, you know, we like to pick on the firefighters and they like to pick on us. It's all good natured. It's, you know. It's just the way that I guess people in high stress jobs deal with the anxiety that accompanies what you do.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's a, you know, public safety is a hard road to go. You know, I've seen it firsthand. So I have nothing but respect for anybody that chooses that profession. And those that make it through and retire, I mean, God bless.
And we made so much money at it. That's the thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's the other thing too. I mean, damn, it's like, it's crazy to me. Sometimes I think about it. I'm like, wait, these guys are out on the streets and, you know, they're still having to go home and deal with financial stress on top of it. It's wild. Yeah. I got, they're wild. It's a different mindset. That's for sure.
You're getting ready to start a new podcast, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping to launch it here in the fall. I'm collecting a series of interviews now. And again, it's kind of going back to what I just said about the mental wellness aspect. I really want to use it as a platform for officers to, you know, get into that component of it. I want to focus less on, you know, the sensational true crime element and get more into the impact, you know, kind of what they went through, how they navigated darkness, basically. You know, I've seen a lot of my clients go through hell and back. And it's, I think if the public knew and could see what I see on a daily basis, it would change their perspective. And that's kind of what I'm hoping to do with the podcast, is really to provide a platform that is apolitical, that doesn't get into the real tactical or ethical issues. It just focuses on, hey, this is a person, it's a very difficult job, you know, understand what that does to a person. And that's really where I want to keep it. You know, it's a light podcast. At the same time, we're not getting too into the weeds of, you know, tactical issues and things like that. It's really more about the emotional impact and good and bad times, you know, but I'm just fascinated by that world because, you know, I get to see it. I have all these great stories from my career, but you know, the general public never sees that side of it. So it's really just to kind of provide a glimpse into what I'm seeing day to day and a glimpse to know the officers in a more personal way.
Well, and it's very much needed. I know there are other podcasts out here that, geez, there's podcasts that, you know, I guess deals with changing your socks every day. I mean, it's amazing how many podcasts are out there. But and you probably already know this, the leading death of police officers in the United States now is suicide.
Oh, I'm fully aware. My focus right now is really on the workers' comp side. And believe it or not, in the workers' comp arena for California anyway, you know, we've had a massive spike in not only PTSD claims, but suicide claims. That's the huge, huge problem right now. In fact, you know, we did a presentation several years ago. There's an association here, a peer support services. And we actually brought the widows of five different officers on stage and had them explain what they saw their spouse go through and some of the things to look out for. And again, it's further, you know, an example of how we can continue to educate the public safety community about how to protect themselves against this, you know? Yeah. So I like to educate the spouses as to what to look for in their partner to see when they're facing some of these issues and some of the red flags that pop up when you're on that road. Cause I've seen a lot of officers go down via suicide.
I can't imagine attending a session like that because that has to be a tearjerker.
Oh, it was brutal. John Ferrone, you know, the guy that started the firm, he hosted it and he basically, we didn't do a whole lot of talking. We just let them tell their story and really the audience, I mean, you could hear a pin drop in that room because everybody had felt some portion of that, you know, and it was really a poignant moment, but also helped me to realize, you know, the need for further discussion about mental wellness within the public safety community.
Right.
You know, and that's really been kind of our mission as a firm in recent years is to create, you know, sort of a team dynamic, you know, so we want the cities to treat their police force or their fire force as a team, right? Somebody struggling, get them treatment, get them back on the field, right? It's this, right now we have this culture of shame and, you know, they're accusing them of, you know, being out on workers' comp and, you know, milking the system, so to speak. But, you know, we're trying to change that perspective and say, hey, these guys are playing a very deadly game. We need to keep them in the game and healthy. And so what can the city do to facilitate that? You know, and that's really our focus right now.
I'll tell you what, man, anything that the Game of Crimes can do to help promote your new podcast when you're ready to launch it, you just let me know and I'll tell all 29 of our followers and, you know, we'll get you some people, at least a few people listen to you.
Hey, I appreciate it. I need all the help I can get. Clearly, I'll be throwing that out there. I'll definitely be asking for help when the time comes.
Well, and if you need, if you're looking for a potential guest on your show, I'm more than happy to make some introductions because we've got some folks that... There's one guy I'm thinking of from Kansas City, Brent Cartwright, that I thought we were going to bring him to the conference this year, but they already had someone else lined up, and we may bring him out next year. But shot multiple times in line of duty.
Oh, wow.
His ego override his butt, just like most of us do at times. The difference is when he gets up to tell his story, he has the psychologist with him that helped him get through it.
Yes.
And she focuses only on first responders. So it's a presentation like I've never seen before. So I'm hoping that we'll get him out.
Oh, that'd be perfect. We're actually trying to put together something like that here with some of our officers that have been on the brink and the people that brought them back. Now that'd be a great one. I'll definitely be asking you about that. I mean, anybody except for Pena. You know what I'm saying? I can't deal with that bastard.
You're just jealous.
I'm joking, Javier, if you're listening to this.
You want to see his little black book. I know what you want.
I've got questions for that kid, you know.
Just make sure Beverly's not around when you ask.
Yeah, exactly. We'll keep that a confidential podcast. It's crazy. He's got some stories.
So what is it that you do in your free time? I know you have a specific talent.
Oh, yeah. I'm a freak oil painter, artist type. It's the complete counterbalance to what I do during the day. It's actually a great balance. I think it's an exercise in resilience. You know, it's sort of a meditative process. I spend hours painting, drawing. In fact, I drew you. I'll post that on my Instagram page again soon. But there is a drawing of Murphy in all his glory, well lit. It's a beautiful, beautiful painting. He insisted on being nude for it, actually, which is weird because I was just drawing his face. I didn't understand it, but it made sense.
But you laughed when I brought it up, and I thought, you haven't seen me nude. What are you laughing at?
I saw that video you put out. I know what you're talking about. I've seen your OnlyFans page. It's all right. It's all right.
Murphy does Milwaukee. That's what it
was. Yeah, you should be proud.
No, and here's, I've got to own up to this. So I've seen it on your Instagram account twice. And I think you mentioned me, and it's how I get the notices on Instagram. And I didn't put your name to the picture. Never. And I don't know why. I guess I'm stereotyping attorneys. I don't know, but never would I have thought of you being the person that drew that picture.
Oh, that's funny.
Until I saw it. It was yesterday that I saw the site. You just came out again on Instagram. You just posted again
recently. Yeah. It was recent.
And then it hit me, oh, man, that's Earl. Oh my gosh. I couldn't believe it. I was really shocked. But then I looked at some of the others and mine looks a little rough. I mean, the girls that you do, they look very beautiful.
I was trying to add some grit to it, you know. I'll add some grit. I was trying to go in with that DEA badass kind of vibe. You know, it's good. I mean, I know you wanted more of the Greek god on like a bearskin rug nude vibe, but I was going for more, you know, I was going for something a little more hard edged, a little more narcos.
I loved it, man. I'm honored that you did that. Is that with pencil? That's all with pencil, right?
Yeah, it was a pencil drawing. If you remember, we were taking some pictures in the green room. We were talking to the officers that caught Chapo, if you recall.
Oh, yeah.
It was that day, and they were showing us some of the evidence and whatnot. I think they had a couple like cartel guns. I can't remember the specifics, but we were all back there taking pictures. That's where that drawing came from. There's a short video of you in the shadows. It's this real dark, you know, shadowy picture. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. Cause it's the opposite to how I think of you, you know, but you have this like real, you look like a hitman or something in it. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Well, yeah, I'll be the first to tell you, I've never been a tough guy. I've never pretended to be a tough guy. I appreciate you trying to make it look like that. Not that it's going to do me any good this far along in life, you know?
Hey, look, tough guys recognize one another. You know, we're on the same page here. You know, basically, we have parallel careers.
That's right. I got you back.
Yeah, appreciate it.
So let's see. What else did I find out about you? Who is Chicken of the Sea?
Okay. Pollo Del Mar is my cat. I'm assuming this is from Mel Sosa. Only Mel would. Yes, I'm a notorious cat lover. I have had a cat for the last, you know, 15 years by the name of Pollo Del Mar, which in English is Chicken of the Sea. So yes, it's a good call. I mean, so, you know, when I'm not doing this law thing, I'm hanging out painting, hanging out with my cat. So as you can see, there's a dichotomy of personality here.
So, well, I was going to say the personality of you and a cat, are those similar or opposites?
Oh, I mean, is there any other way to look at yourself other than as a type of cat? You know what I mean? I think it would be a mistake. Everyone says, you know, the dogs are man's best friend and whatnot, but I'm really advocating for cats to come up. I want more respectability. I want every public safety member to own a cat and a good bottle of Chardonnay. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, there you go. We all have our standards, right? Mine are a lot lower than that.
Yeah, I've seen it all.
We've always been a cat family too. My wife has, and plus dogs. So we get the dog and the cat that can get along together.
Wait, what's your cat's name? Hopefully it's something.
The last one we had was Max. So
Okay. It's safe. I thought you'd give him some weird alias or like a Columbia name or something, you know?
Nah, the one we took to Columbia, that was Puff. You know, if you remember Narco.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sacrificed her cat. That's not. Puff did die in Columbia, but he was old. He had a heart attack.
Gotcha. It wasn't as traumatic as, you know.
Yeah.
a little Hollywood mixed in.
A little. Oh, a lot. You know. That's
Yeah. We'll get into that one later. I'll be talking to you later today, so we'll get into that. That's awesome. Yep.
So just quickly, and I've got one more question for you, but I want to talk about where people can find you. I found you on Instagram at Earl Dove. It's just the easy spellings. He's got over 26,000 followers on there, so you got a good following going.
I mean, you know, the drawings are getting better. The followers are increasing. Now – you can also find us at the FaroneLawGroup.com. And of course, we have an Instagram page as well. on that Instagram page, you'll see a lot of training and videos and whatnot as well. So there's a lot of resources for public safety, primarily in California, but we're really encouraging agencies throughout the country to kind of get together and look at different models that are working. You know, so that's one of the reasons for our Instagram page for the firm is to kind of unite officers, you know, around the country.
And I even found you on TikTok at Earl Dove Art, A-R-T.
So. Yeah, I have a secret TikTok page. I'll get into that later. That's a whole other situation. Oh. You know, we have another podcast later, so we can share our OnlyFans pages and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Got it. So before I let you go, Earl, just any words of wisdom for our listeners, whether it's about their lives, if they're thinking about going into to become an attorney, if they're looking to go into public safety. Any last thoughts here before I let you go?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we do a lot of training with new officers and younger officers. And I always offer a couple pieces of advice. One is be as financially responsible as possible. I mean, I'm sure you've seen a lot of these cops. They come in, they start spending money. They, you know, buy all the toys, all the, you know, jet skis and boats and all this craziness. But, you know, above all, understand that this is a dangerous career. It's a hazardous career. It's rare that people make it all the way through. There's a good chance your money will come to an end at some point. So number one, fiscal responsibility among officers, massively important. And the second, again, I'll emphasize it again, mental wellness. You know, I really think that every officer should do a little bit of therapy now and again, decompression, just because what you're experiencing is so unique that, you know, it's not normal to see the things you're seeing, you know, and if it becomes normal, it's a problem. So, you know, I try to offer those two pieces of advice to most officers. As far as lawyers, you know, we actually had an officer who became a lawyer that works with us. So, you know, that's an interesting perspective. But yeah, for officers in general, I always try to offer that advice. And again, you know, protect yourself out there, you know, both legally, mentally, physically, you know, really understand that it's up to you. The department is not going to come to your rescue in every situation, nor is the public, you know. So really, you need to protect yourself in every way possible, but especially financially, mentally. Those are my one and two.
Excellent. Excellent. And if people want to find you in the San Diego, Southern California area, Ferrone and Ferrone?
Yeah, Ferrone Law Group. You can find us online. And again, feel free to call if you have any legal questions. Right now, I'm focusing primarily on the workers' comp claims, as I mentioned. So, you know, a big thing in workers' comp are cardiovascular issues, right? So the PTSD, the stress, the way that manifests is normally with heart issues. So you'd be shocked at the studies, kind of the medical backing of the idea and the amount of damage that is done to your system, you know, as a result of the stress. So even if you're not experiencing, say, PTSD symptoms, a lot of people are experiencing substantial blood pressure issues, heart attacks at a very young age, you know. So I'm really working on that. It's kind of the passion project, is to make sure that these guys are protected, aware that they can file that, and to make sure that they're, you know, being preventative and keeping themselves in shape.
And if you go to, if you get to meet Earl in his office, ask him for one of these nifty hats here, because this is one of the
Nice. Yeah. That is the official Ferrone Law Group. That's actually one of the limited edition hats. Very nice. Yeah. Well played. Everybody got one of those. That was for the VIPs only.
And it's starting to show a little wear.
Hey, I appreciate you rocking the logo. We'll get you a fresh batch. I'll send you out some new swag.
There you go. I like it because it's a cool looking hat and nobody knows what that emblem means.
It's mysterious, just like the law group itself, just like me.
All right, Earl, thank you so much for coming on the show, brother. It's been an honor to have you on here.
Hey, Steve, absolute honor to be here today. I appreciate you having me on the podcast. I know that it's primarily more sensational stories, public safety and all this chaos, but I appreciate you giving me a chance to chat about my issues. And I hope that your listeners will take some of what I said to heart and, you know, really protect yourself, you know. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us from Law Group, again, at Earl Dove, anytime. We'll talk to you soon, Steve. Appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you, Earl. And I brought you on here because I wanted to show everybody. We do tend to stereotype attorneys, but there are good attorneys out there. You're looking at
not many. I mean, you know, it's like I'm like, there's like three of us, I think. You know, it's
there good. You go. And I know you. I know Earl. So hey. I'm proud to know you, brother.
I appreciate the support.
Our pleasure. And for all our listeners, thank you for continuing to come back every week. If you haven't checked us out on Patreon, go over to patreon.com/gameofcrimes. I'm getting ready to introduce a new segment for our listeners at the upper two levels, in which we do, my former co-host, Morgan Wright, did a 12-episode interview of Javier and I. It's the most extensive interview we've ever done about the Pablo Escobar investigation. So come on over to Patreon, check that out. And again, it's patreon.com/gameofcrimes. Join in. We've got, you'll get early access to podcast releases. You'll hear them 4 days before anybody else does on the regular podcast. You can listen to the case of the month, the Q&A, where you can ask me anything. Got one special section called You Can't Make This Crap Up, and it's about the stupid criminals, an hour's worth of stupid criminal stories. It's hilarious. So come on over, check us out. If you have not seen us on YouTube yet, do me a favor, go over there, type in Game of Crimes Podcast in the search bar at the top, click on the subscribe button, listen to a few episodes, hit the like button, send me your comments. I appreciate you folks coming back every week. Listen to me pontificate. I know the only reason you come back is because of the great guests I bring on. But I also know you keep coming back because you love playing the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game of all. And that's the Game of Crimes. God bless. I'll see you next week.
Has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.